Hi there, I'm Gavin Crawford. I'm a writer, an actor, and a comedian. And for the last 8 or 9 years, I have been navigating life with my mother's increasing dementia. Has it been sad? Yeah. Has it been funny? Also, yeah. That's what my brand new podcast series, Let's Not Be Kidding, is about. It's the true story of my life as a comedian, my mom, and dementia. Let's Not Be Kidding, with me, Gavin Crawford. A new 7-part series from CBC Podcasts, available now.
This is a CBC podcast.
Me, 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 ma, me, me, ma, ma,
Connor, my 17-year-old son.
Test 1, 2, 3.
Hello, Connor.
Hello.
I'm getting to a point in my research where it's starting to feel like the more I learn about aging, the less I know. All of this is pretty complicated. So I sat down the other day and drew a flowchart to capture everything I think I know about it. At the bottom are the obvious outputs: age-related diseases and death. And now I'm showing the chart to Connor, who's in his last year of high school. I'm trying to explain to him what influences how long we get to live until those tragic outputs catch up with us. So right in the middle is you.
Okay.
So there's the idea that, you know, we're all born with 6.4 letters of DNA, 6.4 billion actually, and that code our genes. And we've got like 30,000 genes. And some of those genes are actually responsible for how long we could live.
Right.
So some of us have genes that will shorten our lives. Some of us have genes that will lengthen our lives.
Okay. Okay.
And then on top of that, our environment plays a big role.
Right.
So things like exercise, diet, sleep, stress, those kinds of things, if you do them the right way, you could live longer than your genes say.
Whoa.
And if you do them the wrong way, you could live shorter than your genes say.
Okay.
And then the third thing that comes into it is your luck. What I mean by this is there's a degree of randomness. Even if you live a healthy life and your genes predispose you to longevity, there's always a chance that random mutations in your DNA could still lead to a fatal disease early in life. Or you could get hit by a bus.
So sometimes it's completely out of the control of both our genes and ourselves.
It seems that way.
Interesting. Okay.
And so then all of those things kind of affect what researchers call hallmarks of aging. Now I'm showing him the middle portion of the chart, a list of specific biological changes that happen as we age. The term hallmarks is intentionally non-specific because it's not always clear which of these cause aging and which are more like graying hair, things that just happen when we age. And so they don't really say that they're causes of aging, but they know that they're all like interconnected. So if you can improve one, you're also sometimes improving the others.
Interesting. Okay.
One of the big areas has to do with just how many healthy cell divisions we have left.
Is that sort of what aging is? Is us running out of cell divisions?
So that's part of it. But then the other thing is that it's about healthy cell divisions. We always have these errors that get introduced into our cells and we have quality control mechanisms. So there's two things that happen as we get older. We can get more of these spontaneous failures in our cells, but we also have less ability to correct those errors.
Awesome. Okay.
So in addition to the number of healthy cell divisions we have left, there are all these other things too, like disrupted immune system. So we know that people generally, as they get older, their immune systems don't work as well. There are a bunch of other hallmarks listed here on my flowchart: inflammation, methylation, zombie cells. I'll tell you more about all these. We'll definitely talk more about zombie cells. And the one that I'm looking into now is this one called mTOR, or nutrient sensing. mTOR. M-T-O-R. An acronym.
Oh, what is that?
So it's basically this mechanism that we have in our body that is really important for telling our cells whether they need to grow and divide or slow down and preserve energy. And if we can get them to slow down a little bit, like basically in every kind of animal where it's been studied, doing that can increase the animal's lifespan.
Oh my gosh, fascinating. Okay. Are we finding out how to use that with humans or?
My kid, he asks the right questions. Scientists have already discovered drugs that can add months or years to animal lives by targeting mTOR and other hallmarks of aging. And some of the drugs with the greatest promise are already widely used in humans to treat other diseases like diabetes or cancer. But proving these can extend human life? That's the real challenge. Because you can show that a drug extends the life of worms in like a month. Because their natural lifespan is just 2 or 3 weeks. But the same experiment in people? That would take decades. Which makes it difficult to find investors or even governments to fund the human trials. Oh, and there's one other complication. The government health regulators who need to sign off on the safety and efficacy of new drugs, they don't currently recognize aging as a disease. So there's no roadmap for approving a cure. So what are the hallmarks of aging and the drugs that can target them? How do we find out if these drugs really do extend human life? And what will it take for regulators to approve them for you and me? I'm Keith MacArthur, and this is Unlocking the Fountain, a podcast about the mysteries of aging and the scientific quest to slow, stop, or reverse it.
What is aging? A slowing, a decay? And these are all chemical reactions. And there are substances that can stop this breakdown.
You want an extended lifespan, a few hundred years to play around with.
I'll just live as long as I want to live. Is that it?
This is episode 4, Fountain in a Pill. A few days before Christmas in 1965, the Canadian Navy vessel Cape Scott dropped anchor off the coast of Easter Island. A small army of doctors and scientists were shuttled to shore in a mission co-sponsored by the Government of Canada and the World Health Organization. Their objective was to measure the island's environment and the health of the indigenous Rapa Nui people, while it remained one of the last isolated populations in the world. The Chilean government was about to begin construction on the island's first airstrip, and the life of the Rapa Nui was about to change dramatically. The researchers collected soil samples, which would eventually have tremendous scientific and medical importance. But at the time, they didn't know what they had. And the samples sat untouched in a Montreal lab for years. But nearly a decade later, researcher Surendra Sehgal took a closer look at the soil and found that it contained a molecule scientists had never seen before. This molecule turned out to be something of a miracle drug, one with multiple applications. It was a fungicide. It could prevent organ rejection in transplant recipients. And it could slow division of cancer cells. Researchers named the drug rapamycin, after the indigenous name for Easter Island and its people, the Rapa Nui. Oh yeah, there's another thing this miracle drug can do. Slows aging and extends lifespan. Remember last episode how we learned that slashing calories could extend lifespan in mice and worms? Rapamycin seems to do something similar, tricking an organism's cells into thinking they're not getting enough nutrients. As a result, the organism doesn't age as quickly. Sehgal made it his life's mission to bring this drug to market. He even used it on himself after a terminal cancer diagnosis and stayed alive far longer than his doctors expected. Sagal would die before he could figure out how the drug worked. But his research carried on. Scientists figured there must be a biological on-off switch for cell growth that could be turned off either by starvation or this drug. And in the early 90s, they found it. A protein that tells cells when to grow and when to slow down and repair and recycle themselves. The protein became known as mTOR, which stands for Mechanistic Target of Rapamycin. Think of your cells as a NASCAR racer. When the engine's running, you're moving fast, your cells are dividing. But when you're low on fuel or need some repairs, you pull into the pit stop. mTOR proteins are like the gauges and warning lights on the dashboard that tell the driver when it's time for a stop. They detect when there aren't enough nutrients and tell cells to stop dividing and to repair themselves instead. Rapamycin, it tinkers with the mTOR gauges, tricking the cells into pulling into the pit stop. A race car can't get repairs while it's moving forward, and it can't move forward while it's getting repairs. And it's the same with your cells. They're either dividing or repairing themselves. They can't do both at the same time. And generally speaking, the cars or mice or people who don't stop for repairs won't last as long.
The best validated biology that underlies why we age is the activity of mTOR.
That's Joan Manick, an expert in aging who believes rapamycin might also slow aging in humans.
In every species study to date, if you inhibit mTOR with rapamycin or genetically, their lifespan is extended.
Health regulators around the world have already approved rapamycin, just not to slow aging.
We know we can give rapamycin to humans. It's been done for years in patients who have cancer or in patients having organ transplantation. So we know this is a drug that you can use in humans. And the fact that you may be able to use it to slow down aging is a game changer.
In 2014, Manick joined a team responsible for researching new categories of medicine at Novartis, the Swiss pharmaceutical giant. When Manick's boss asked what new categories she wanted to explore, she didn't hesitate.
So I said, I'd like to work on aging. I think this is actually a biology that you can target with medicines, and it could be a whole new way of treating all sorts of aging-related conditions for which we have nothing at the moment. And my boss at the time said, Joan, I understand why you're saying this, but you've got to not repeat this to anyone because they'll think you're wacky. And so I was like, oh, my bubble was burst.
Big Pharma wasn't quite ready to investigate a fountain of youth pill. But a few short months later, things changed for Manick.
Fortunately, the CEO at the time and head of research decided this was something they wanted to support and allowed me to do the first clinical trial at Novartis to see, can we target aging biology to improve something about aging in a human?
Rapamycin had become an important drug for transplant and some cancer patients. So Novartis had already developed its own compound that targeted mTOR in a similar way. It was known as everolimus.
So I had a drug that I knew the safety profile that I could use in clinical trials. What was interesting is we had to decide what would be an endpoint for a clinical trial of something that's targeting aging in a human, and that's tricky because aging occurs over decades.
If Manick couldn't measure longevity itself, she had to find something else to target as a proxy for aging. But what? She'd read about an animal study where rapamycin had been given to old mice for 6 weeks before they received a flu shot.
And it was interesting, not only did they respond better to an influenza vaccine, they actually lived longer. So we took that study and just gave older adults 6 weeks of this rapamycin analog, everolimus, and then gave them a flu vaccine and looked to see if they responded better.
Weakened immunity, a well-established hallmark of aging, would be the proxy Manic could measure on people. Manic had the support of the top bosses at Novartis, but many of her colleagues thought her work was a waste of time. After all, Novartis sold everolimus to lower immunity in transplant patients so they wouldn't reject their new lungs or kidneys. And now, Manic was trying to show that in low, intermittent doses, it could actually do the opposite, boost immunity.
And so in my first performance review, one of the comments was, you know, Joan's really nice. She seems to be good, but she's chooses terrible indications to work on, like aging. You know, what a terrible choice of an indication. So it was funny. There was a lot of skepticism about this trial.
And so, would it be fair to say that you had a hunch here, but your trial was a bit of a gamble. You didn't know which way it was going to go.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I had no idea. It was nerve-wracking. I had no idea.
Because people were kind of questioning, you know, why you were doing this, did it take on an extra kind of personal level of...
Absolutely. I was going to like completely fall on my face career-wise if this failed. There was clearly a lot of skepticism. And so, it was a personal like concern for my career. Like, did I just do something really, really, really make a stupid bet?
And so what did you find?
That the people who got low dose or intermittent doses of everolimus had higher antibody titers to the flu vaccine than people who got placebo. So it boosted their immune response to the flu vaccine.
The trial was a success, and there was more.
And what we noticed in that first study is not only did the people who got the mTOR inhibitors have a better response to the flu vaccine, they were reporting having fewer respiratory tract infections. Not flu infections, just all comer, colds, bronchitis, fewer were reported as adverse events. And that gave us a window that maybe the improvement in immune function was more than just enhancing the response to one vaccine. We were enhancing the response to infectious pathogens as well.
And then what was the response?
Oh, everyone was so happy, you know, because it was a sort of opened the door to maybe you can actually target aging biology and do something helpful in a human. You know, it was the first demonstration this may be true. It needs to be validated, which is what we've been trying to do, but at least that first step worked.
Novartis spun Manic's aging work into a separate company called Restore Bio. And in 2018, Manic tested a different molecule, RTB-2100, which, I don't know, sounds like a robot, but is actually another compound that tells mTOR to tell cells to stop dividing. This study confirmed that patients who took the vaccine got the flu and other laboratory-confirmed sicknesses less often. Restore Bio's shares more than doubled on the news. For the first time in history, a drug that targeted aging biology seemed poised to go on the market. But Restore Bio wasn't ready to sell the drug as a vaccine booster quite yet. Before they could, they needed approval from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. They hoped to use the same criteria they'd used in the last trial. But the FDA had different ideas.
When we then said, okay, for the phase 3, we want to have laboratory-confirmed respiratory tract infections as our endpoint again. They said, you know what? We have never approved a drug that just improves immune function and decreases the incidence of all kinds of respiratory tract infections. And we've thought about it. And for a pivotal trial, what matters to us is how patients feel and function.
Earlier trials had measured specific medical outcomes, an increase in antibodies and fewer confirmed infections. But for the test that really counted, the FDA was asking for something more subjective, how patients felt. I kind of get where they were coming from. If a drug is supposed to help patients, the best way to measure that is to ask patients how they feel. It's patient-centered research, and that's something I feel really strongly about. But in this case, it muddied the waters. Because older people sometimes get flu-like symptoms, fatigue, coughs, and runny noses, even when they don't have the flu or a cold. Sometimes these are just symptoms of being old. But the study counted them as sick people not being helped by the medicine. So in November of 2019, Restore Bio announced that it had failed to meet the FDA's criteria for phase 3. The company's shares fell more than 90%.
When the results came out negative, we all said there's something wrong. This cannot be right. I mean, everyone in the company said there's been an error. Something got messed up in the randomization of the drug. You know, we were sure this was just disbelief. Disbelief. But such is science.
Hello, I'm Jess Milton. For 15 years, I produced The Vinyl Cafe with the late, great Stuart McLean. Every week, more than 2 million people tuned in to hear funny, fictional, feel-good stories about Dave and his family. We're excited to welcome you back to the warm and welcoming world of The Vinyl Cafe with our new podcast, Backstage at The Vinyl Cafe. Each week, we'll share 2 hilarious stories by Stuart, and for the first time ever, I'll tell you what it was like behind the scenes. Subscribe for free wherever you get your podcasts.
Mannix wasn't the only promising aging therapy to fail to meet its benchmarks. Another came out of a company called Unity Biotechnology. Unity's focus is on another one of the benchmarks of aging: zombie cells. Also known by their boring scientific name, senescent cells.
So, what is a senescent cell?
Ned David is one of the company's founders.
Well, we all begin life at conception as a single cell. And then over the arc of our lives, we, this single cell, have a capacity to divide a finite number of times, you know, around 50 times.
The Hayflick limit, which we learned about in the last episode.
And on the road to 50 cell divisions, cells in various tissues in your body will encounter some form of stress they cannot resolve. Could be DNA damage, could be exposure to too much glucose or failure of their mitochondria. And there's a few others. But any one of these unresolvable stresses will cause a cell to pull an emergency brake, begin making a bunch of proteins that are part of this emergency brake, and stop dividing forever. And when cells pull this emergency brake, that is when we call them senescent cells.
Zombie cells. Their ability to pull the emergency brake, it provides critical protection against cancer. The problem with these zombie cells is they stop dividing, but they don't go away. Instead, they accumulate and secrete molecules that cause inflammation, another hallmark of aging. Senescent cells are effectively poisoning the healthy cells around them. Undead and dangerous. If you've watched The Walking Dead, you get this concept. In 2011, researchers at the Mayo Clinic published research where they'd been able to remove zombie cells from lab mice, delaying a number of age-related conditions and extending lifespan.
I remember when I read the paper, I was sitting in an airport, actually in Calgary, Canada, of all places, eating French fries. And 5 different people emailed me the same paper within the space of 20 minutes as I sat there in the airport lounge saying, oh my God, you have to read this. This should be the next company you work on. And 72 hours later, I was talking to the Mayo Clinic folks who did the experiment, and we agreed to get together to talk about how to set up a company.
Unity Biotech was born. The company was one of the first investments for Laura Deming's Longevity Fund. Removal of senescent cells through medicines called senolytics had the potential to prevent or delay a range of age-related diseases from blindness to Alzheimer's. For its first clinical trial, Unity focused on osteoarthritis. Ned David likes to say it's the second most common age-related disease. Diabetes is first, and the main reason it hurts to be old. Unity developed a drug that targeted zombie cells and injected it into the painful knee joints of 36 seniors. Another 18 got a placebo. The phase one results were extremely promising. They showed that a single injection could dramatically reduce knee pain. Ned David was excited. And honestly, so was I. Both my mom and my mother-in-law have had painful arthritis and knee replacements. I wanted this drug to work for them. So I was looking forward to learning the results of the phase two study, which would involve a much larger number of patients and track them over 24 weeks instead of just 12. But 12 weeks in, Unity abruptly canceled the trial. Because this time, the early data showed no difference between patients who had been given medicine and those on the placebo. Unity shifted its anti-zombie program. Now its focus is on senescent cells in the eyes and brain.
One of the questions we often get is, hey, you know, your phase two trial did not treat this disease. What does that tell you about this entire mission that you're on? And my answer to those people who ask that question is really nothing. I have every faith that, you know, these senescent cells that accumulate with aging are contributing to numerous diseases of aging.
Despite the setback, research into senescent cells is still seen as one of the most promising areas for longevity medicines. Now, one thing you may have noticed about these trials so far, instead of targeting aging directly, they're focused on smaller goals like boosting vaccines and reducing knee pain. And so far, even those are proving elusive. So I asked Laura Deming about this trade-off between the big, long-term goal of extending lifespan and these smaller, shorter-term goals.
Yeah, so I think like my viewpoint on this has changed quite a bit over the past decade. So when I first entered the field, my impression was that we needed to be very conservative and make sure that every step that anyone took in the aging field seemed very rational to people who even didn't believe in aging biology as being able to affect lifespans. So for example, if you look at most of the companies we invested in the first fund, they're all definitely targeting diseases and they're using aging-relevant pathways in the most part to get there.
Like Unity, for example. But now?
But I think what we really want is the first trial to investigate that question of, like, can we actually impact lifespan in a deterministic way?
Can we extend human life? That's the question that really matters. And after years of delays, we may be about to find out. In 2014, a group of scientists and doctors met at a secluded castle in Spain to plan a mission. Their goal was clear: to figure out how to get drugs that might extend lifespan and health span to consumers. How could they overcome the reluctance of the FDA and other health regulators to approve drugs that targeted aging?
We had preclinical data in rodents, in many animals, that show that we can do something about aging.
That's Nir Barzilai, the gerontologist who's discovered several aging-related genes.
Now, this is the problem. Usually, you have a discovery, and it's relevant to a disease, and you form a biotech or you go to a pharmaceutical and they develop a drug, and they're testing the drug, and they go to the FDA, and the FDA approve the drug for use. Well, aging is not one of the FDA indication, okay? So the question for us is, what can we do to prove to the FDA that aging can be targeted?
First, they needed a drug. They discussed rapamycin, but were worried about its side effects. Another possibility was a drug called metformin. It's one of the most widely used drugs in the world, prescribed to help regulate sugar levels in people with type 2 diabetes. And it showed promise as a longevity drug, not just on lab animals, but people too. Okay, this research I'm going to tell you about blew my mind. People with type 2 diabetes are usually less healthy than average, right? They're often overweight and less physically active. Their health outcomes shouldn't be good. But this one study looked into the medical records of 78,000 British people taking metformin and found something remarkable. Metformin wasn't just treating diabetes. It also seemed to be delaying cancers and cardiovascular disease.
The people in metformin, although they're diabetic and more obese and have more diseases to start with, they have significantly less mortality than people without diabetes.
Over the period of time researchers looked at, people on metformin were 17% less likely to die than healthy people who weren't on the drug. Barzilai had been the first to describe metformin's effects on glucose production back in the 80s. Now, he saw metformin had the potential to be the proof of concept for a new category of pharmaceuticals, anti-aging drugs. Barzilai knew metformin wasn't likely to be the most powerful drug in the category, but it had a lot going for it. It was out of patent, so it was cheap, just pennies a day. And over decades of use, its safety had been well established with limited side effects.
And metformin was really the one and only opportunity then, even now, because the other drugs that we used were not safe. We didn't have preliminary data with them. And with metformin, we knew everything. You know, it's important for us not to kill anyone on the road to success.
So in 2015, Barzilai and a team of aging researchers met with the FDA to get buy-in on the first large-scale clinical trial for a drug that targeted aging. They took the regulators through their proposal for a study of 3,000 Americans, half on metformin and half on a placebo. They would track a range of age-related diseases over 5 or 6 years. Heart attacks, strokes, cancers, cognitive decline, dementia. They called it the TAME trial, which stands for Targeting Aging with Metformin. Zoologist Steve Austad was also at the FDA meeting. He said they had to be careful about how they presented the study.
Now, we've had to kind of disguise it because the FDA does not approve drugs to slow aging because the FDA only approves drugs for diseases. So we've had to go in there and say, now, what we really are after is a drug that prevents cancer and heart disease and dementia at the same time. And if it does all those things at the same time, there's no way to do that except to affect aging. But we couldn't say that officially to them.
The plan worked. Not only did the FDA give the trial a thumbs up, they proposed additional endpoints to measure, including whether metformin reduced hospital visits and whether it delayed wrinkled skin and graying hair. But FDA buy-in was easy compared with raising $77 million to fund the trial. Usually, a pharma company would pay for the clinical trial of its drug, in the hopes that it might recoup that investment if the drug is approved. But since metformin's patent had expired, that option wasn't available. And the FDA wasn't prepared to pay for the study. It took 4 years, and an anonymous patron, Barzilai describes as a young billionaire in his 40s, but by late 2019, Barzilai announced they'd raised enough funding for the TAME trial to begin. They were finally ready to start recruiting 30,000 participants. But in 2020, everything changed.
Tonight, U.S. airports on high alert, screening passengers for symptoms of a deadly new virus.
A SARS-like virus, which has infected...
This coronavirus, John, it's making people anxious.
The latest on a coronavirus emergency.
The World Health Organization just declared this a global health emergency.
This is an evolving situation.
Any research that wasn't related to COVID-19 was put on hold. With the pandemic still raging around the world, recruitment of patients for the TAME trial is yet to begin.
It's a big deal because it'll be the first formal trial to test a drug for its property t- to slow aging. There's never been anything like that. Now we've
Steve Ostad.
I mean, if it succeeds, that's great, right? But even if it fails, I think what that's going to do is show there's a path to approval, to getting an FDA-approved drug for its ability to treat aging, as if aging were a disease. And I think that will awaken the drug companies to the potential money that they could make off of a drug that people might start taking when they're 50 and take for the rest of their lives. Because the drug companies have not been very interested in aging research because they've always assumed that you'd never get FDA approved because it would take a 50-year trial. And so they just have ignored it. But I think the TAME trial is showing, no, there are ways to evaluate drugs like this. There is a pathway to FDA approval. And so the next big thing, you know, the next statin on the market here is likely to be a drug that combats aging.
That all sounds so promising. Because one of the reasons I'm spending all this time digging into medicine that could slow or delay aging is that I want to live long and strong to help my son Bryson. His rare disease means he needs help from my wife Laura or me to navigate his world. But will a Fountain of Youth pill go on the market in time? And what does my own biology say about how long I'm likely to live? I've heard that there are these tests that can calculate your biological age by measuring your telomeres or markers in your DNA. And that a simple genetic test can reveal a lot about whether you're prone to live into your 90s or die in your 60s. Some people say they wouldn't want to know all this stuff, like your chances of getting Alzheimer's disease, but I want to know it all. Next time on Unlocking the Fountain.
So what is this test?
So this one is supposed to measure our cell age.
If aging is truly epigenetic, then it should be reversible.
How you eat, what you drink, and what you're exposed to, how you sleep, stress levels.
Let us see. Are you ready?
I'm ready. I'm ready.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Unlocking the Fountain is hosted and written by me, Keith MacArthur. Our associate producers are Sarah Melton and Graham McDonald, who also does our sound design. Our digital producers are S.K. Robert and Emily Cannell. Chris Oak is our story editor. Additional audio from ITV Anglia, Paramount Pictures, NBC, CNN, CBS, and ABC. Our senior producer is Tina Verma, and our executive producer is Arif Nourani.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.